On Saturday, Big Knockout Boxing launches in Las Vegas with a major fight at the Mandalay Bay Event Center. Big Knockout Boxing is boxing, but boxing with a difference. The ring is not a square. It really is a circle. The rounds are shorter, and the rules are designed to encourage the big knockout punch. But not all boxing aficionados are backing this attempt to reinvigorate the sweet science. Boxing blogger Alex McClintock recently wrote in The Guardian that after Big Knockout Boxing, we should expect the Hunger Games to become a sanctioned spectator sport. McClintock blogs for the boxing site Queensberry Rules, and he joins us now from Sydney, Australia. Alex McClintock, welcome to KNPR.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. So, the Hunger Games. Is Big Knockout Boxing really that barbaric?
Look, well, it probably didn't help, Dave, that the press release featured this very futuristic imagery that was a bit reminiscent of the Hunger Games and Rollerball. Basically, my issue with Big Knockout Boxing isn't that it's a fundamental redesign of what boxing is as a sport. It's just that it takes away some of the few protections that boxers have. And it's going to end up with boxers getting hit more and more knockouts. And really, when you get down to it, a knockout is a traumatic brain injury.
When you say it takes away protections, what kind of protections are you talking about?
Because they've changed the ring from what you and I would understand as a traditional boxing ring to what they call the pit, which itself sounds pretty barbaric. But it's more like a futuristic circle where it doesn't have ring rope, which means boxers can't really use their feet to avoid punches because they can't back up. They can't lie on the rope. So what you're going to have is something that's kind of akin to Rock'em Sock'em Robots, but with humans.
And now, at the same time, though, as you quoted the press release, talking about Big Knockout Boxing encouraging what it calls aggressive punching, isn't that what boxing is supposed to do? I mean, aren't the greatest fighters the ones who had the big knockout punch? Dempsey, Lewis, Ali, Tyson?
When I read that press release, I found it kind of challenging as a boxing fan and a boxing journalist, because I find Big Knockout Boxing kind of challenging and distasteful, then what does that say about boxing itself? But I came to the conclusion that at least boxing allows fighters a fair chance to hit and not get hit. I mean, you've got a list there of big punches. But, I mean, the most popular boxer in the world right now is Floyd Mayweather, who is by no means a big puncher and is, in fact, a fairly defensive fighter. And in the press release for Big Knockout Boxing, it says defensive fighters need not apply.
So how significant is the smaller ring?
From what I've heard, from what I've read, the things that are going to make Big Knockout Boxing more aggressive are the fact that there's a smaller ring, which is going to force more engagement between the two fighters. So fighters who have spent time training on their footwork, there's going to be no opportunity for them to use their skills. The gloves are going to have less padding at the front, which is going to encourage more knockout blows. And then there's the fact that the rounds are going to be 2 minutes long rather than the traditional 3 minutes, which is going to mean that the fight is faster paced, which itself is not so much of a problem because amateur boxing has worked on two-minute rounds for a long time before switching to three-minute rounds.
The new version of boxing here has no ropes. Is that going to make a difference?
It's quite natural if you're being punched in the face to back away from the punches. So I'm not really sure how it's going to work if boxers do back away and hit the edge of the pit and fall over. I mean, I imagine there's a potential for injury there.
Now, you take a dig at Nevada in your column for The Guardian. Should the state's athletic commission have sanctioned this sport?
Well, if I knew I was going to be doing an interview on Nevada Public Radio, I probably wouldn't have made the joke, Dave.
Okay.
But no, basically, when it comes down to it, I'm not sure that they should have sanctioned it. It's removing what little protection boxing offers its athletes in terms of the ability to defend themselves, or removing some of that protection. Just because you can make money from something doesn't mean it's a good thing.
I assume then that you think it was wrong for Governor Brian Sandoval to treat the promoters as VIPs?
Yeah, I think that given that this is a venture that's making money from removing the protections of athletes in an already dangerous sport, I don't think that Governor Sandoval should have fated the promoters to the level that he has.
We're talking with boxing blogger Alex McClintock, who recently wrote a column for The Guardian website criticizing the rules of Big Knockout Boxing. The new style of fighting will open with a big card this weekend at the Mandalay Events Center. You also say that the advent of Big Knockout Boxing poses some tough questions for fans. What kinds of tough questions are you thinking of?
If we as boxing fans find big knockout boxing distasteful, then what does that say about boxing itself? Because the rule changes aren't, it's not a quantum leap, it's really more of a tweak. And so it asks us, why do we watch boxing? Do we watch it for the skills, or do we watch it just for the big knockouts ourselves? And I'd like to think that there is some combination of factors that draws boxing fans to the sport, not just the pure violence. But big knockout boxing does ask the question, do we just watch it for the violence?
If we do, in fact, watch it for the violence, is this a matter of fans just being in denial about the brain injuries that are so common in the sport?
Well, yeah, I think that's a very fair question to ask. And I think a lot of fans are in denial about, and it is sometimes easier to look the other way than think about the consequences of something that we watch for entertainment. In the case of big knockout boxing, I think that having less defense and more knockouts is probably going to lead to adverse health outcomes for fighters. I think it's safe to say that more knockouts is not a good thing.
As you noted a couple of moments ago, the traditional boxing rules over the years have been tweaked to make boxing safer. 3-minute rounds, the compulsory 8-count with the knockdown, better padding on gloves, even shorter fights. But have any of those really made boxing safer?
I think this is a difficult question in terms of statistics and record keeping, because you'll often hear it repeated that boxing was much safer in the bare knuckle days because gloves allow people to sustain longer beatings and more subconcussive injuries. I'm not entirely sure if that's true, in the sense that record keeping in the pre-gloved era, pre-1900, around the turn of the century, probably wasn't the greatest. And in a lot of places, boxing was in fact illegal, so I doubt there was good record keeping. I'm not sure if the sport has got safer or not.
But I think of some athletes even today, like Muhammad Ali, who was so dominant in the sport in the 60s and in the 70s, and yet, as dominant as he was, he's obviously suffered serious brain injuries over the years. Can we ever think of boxing as being safe?
I'm not sure if we can really think of it being safe, and this is why I think big knockout boxing asks hard questions of boxing fans. But I think that at a minimum we can think of boxing as safer than the alternatives.
Well, you say the new sport will result in more injuries of the kind that Muhammad Ali suffered, let's say, and even devalue the skills of boxers who have honed their craft over the years. Explain that for us.
You're going to get fighters, like, and no offense to the two fighters who are in the main event on Saturday, Brian Vera and Gabe Rosado, but they are not the most defensively apt boxers. Neither of them has really met a punch that they couldn't block with their face. I think that both of them, both men have sustained 8 losses each in their professional career. And I think that if either of them had done their entire professional career in big knockout boxing, they wouldn't be boxing anymore. There's not many boxers who can be even fringe contenders, which is what Vera and Rosado are in the middleweight division, after sustaining 8 knockout losses.
Back when mixed martial arts first began as an organized sport, one of the charges made against it was that it was pushing us a step closer to human cockfighting. Are you seeing something like that in this sport?
Look, personally, I'm not a big fan of MMA and UFC. It's just not to my taste. But I can recognize that there's a different skill set there. But I think that the charge does stick, that it's pushing us towards closer to some kind of human cockfighting. At least MMA is a different sport. Big knockout boxing is just traditional boxing with some of the protections for the athletes removed.
Ultimately, isn't this something that's the responsibility of the boxers themselves, if they choose to participate knowing the risks? Or are they in denial, like some fans of boxing as well, about brain injuries and risk and such?
Of course they are. Everyone thinks they're immortal. I don't think you could be a professional boxer if you sat down and considered the long-term risk of brain injury. I don't necessarily buy the argument that we should just allow athletes to do what they want. A lot of these athletes are not from nice middle-class family homes. A lot of them come from pretty dark places. I think that there needs to be some kind of regulatory oversight to stop the exploitation of athletes and stop them putting their own health in danger.
Alex McClintock blogs about boxing at Queensberry Rules. We've got a link to his column on the Guardian website that criticized the new rules for boxing that have been developed by Big Knockout Boxing. You'll find that column at knprnews.org. Alex McClintock, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks very much, Dave.
And now we turn to other points of view. Joining us now in the studio is the official spokesman for Big Knockout Boxing, Mark Altieri. Mark Altieri, welcome to KNPR.
Thanks for having me.
You've listened to the conversation with Alex McClintock. Big Knockout Boxing takes away the defenses that a boxer has in traditional boxing. Is that accurate? Is that true or false?
It's entirely inaccurate, to be honest with you. It's funny, as a communications professional, we often refer to certain types of questions or situations as softballs when something's served up rather easily. I think this is more like t-ball, because this one's just kind of sitting there for me. And let me explain why. First and foremost, Big Knockout Boxing was developed by a group of individuals that includes longtime boxing incumbents and people that have been a part of the boxing industry and game for quite a long time. So this isn't a group of outsiders coming in with some sensationalistic ideas. And safety was really at the forefront. The big equation that we wanted to solve with Big Knockout Boxing was, how do we create a modern and more action-oriented and exciting version of boxing while maintaining the same safety standards that boxing has maintained in other combat sports?
But given that the action involves contact, mm-hmm. and involves hitting, and involves some measure of violence, how do you maintain safety at the same time?
I'm not going to be a spokesman for boxing and whether or not boxing is safe, but I can speak about Big Knockout Boxing and how its safety relates to conventional and accepted forms of combat sports that are out there today. Now, to his points about the removal of protective measures, we see this quite the contrary. First and foremost is the fact that our rounds are 1 minute shorter and our fights, the number of rounds, are significantly less than boxing. So by pure virtue of mathematics of time, there's going to be fewer punches thrown, less activity. Now, will that activity be promoted or encouraged to happen quicker because you've only got 2 minutes to work with each round, you only have five or seven rounds to deal with? Sure, fighters are going to have to get after it. But I think what a lot of people have seen, what we've seen, what a lot of folks have read, is frequency and volume and number of punches absorbed by boxers over lengths of time in fights is potentially as damaging or more damaging than a straight one-shot knockout punch. So I'm not here to speculate on what is more damaging than something else in boxing, but what I can tell you is just logically, by virtue of the math, the fact that our fights are almost half as long as a conventional boxing fight and the rounds themselves are shorter simply will mean there will not be the same volume and frequency of punches thrown or punches absorbed over the duration of a fight.
Now, what about Alex McClintock's claim that there's really no place for defensive maneuvers, that the absence of ropes around the pit, for instance, makes it impossible to rest?
Love that question. It's my next point, is that the absence of ropes, it really shouldn't be perceived in that manner. In actuality, we all have watched boxing. When fighters have ropes, they have a tendency to be pinned against those ropes. They have a tendency to be cornered, as we've heard about, and we all know what happens there. The fighter brings up his defense, and his opponent can lay into him with a series of repetitive and violent blows in short bursts, and this happens frequently throughout the course of a fight, not just once, but almost round by round in some cases. That's a lot of damage. That's a lot of activity being levied against that opponent because of the fact that he's falling back to ropes or the corner. Now, 2 points I want to make. If there are no ropes, this ostensibly encourages fighters to have to be more athletic. It's going to require a higher degree of lateral movement left to right, where fighters wouldn't have to maybe move as much laterally. They could just fall back into that habit of getting back into the ropes, putting their guard up. Our guys, our fighters, are going to be forced to have to move laterally with more athleticism. The other point I want to make is, this is a very exaggerated take he has on the pit and the pit format. The truth about the pit is it's 17 feet in diameter. When you see the pit, when you watch a fight, when you stand in the pit, there is a lot more room there than Mr. McClintock is giving credit in his perception. There's a lot of movement for athleticism, for movement forward, back, left, and right. And I simply think that footwork, head movement, all of the same aspects that make up the sweet science are going to be even more required in this format.
Well, you're saying that there's more movement. On the other hand, the marketing suggests there's nowhere to hide. You know, that's the clip from the ad. The pace is faster. The rounds are shorter. You know, once you enter the pit, there's nowhere to hide. Mm-hmm. So it sort of sounds like that's not necessarily what you're selling in the marketing campaign. The idea that you can move around a little bit more.
Listen, you know, and I'll be completely honest about it. We need to market the sport in a manner that we know will appeal to touch points and trigger points that fans are looking for. They're looking for action. They're looking for exciting fights that are battles in the ring, that have exciting finishes. Obviously, knockouts are a part of that. I don't think I can find a boxing fan who doesn't love to see a great battle in the ring and a great knockout finish? And the one thing I heard Mr. McClintock say was he talked about fans and he talked about, well, do fans like the skill involved in boxing or do we like the knockouts? Well, those two things are not mutually exclusive of each other. Skill results in knockouts. A skilled fighter can deliver a knockout blow. When you're watching a truly skilled fighter, whether that was Muhammad Ali, Joe Louis, these men were truly masters in the art of the sweet science, and their goal at the end of the day was to finish fights. And by finishing, I mean by knocking out or forcing an end to the fight prior to going the distance. They didn't step in the ring and want to go the distance. They wanted to step in the ring and be so technically adept that they could knock out their opponent. This has been at the heart of boxing since its inception. So this idea of either or, I think, is inaccurate, and I think it's unrealistic.
We're talking about Big Knockout Boxing, the new format for boxing, launches Saturday night at the Mandalay Events Center. We're talking with Mark Altieri, official spokesman for Big Knockout Boxing. Also joining us is Francisco Aguilar, who is chairman of the Nevada State Athletic Commission. Cisco, welcome to KNPR.
Good morning.
Good morning. How did the Athletic Commission assess the potential dangers of the new rules in Big Knockout Boxing?
Well, I think when Big Knockout Boxing existed prior to coming to Nevada, they had a different agenda and a different objective. And I think when they came to Nevada, we had some of these preconceived notions just as anybody else did. However, after we spent a significant time with the promoter, with the actual pit, and watching the fight occur in the pit, we were able to relieve some of those misconceptions and work with them to develop a product that is safe and in the best interest of the fighter.
So you heard the conversation with Alex McClintock a few minutes ago, and you determined that some of the problems he raised were not serious problems?
Well, I think anytime you think about a fighter's safety, you think of concerns. However, I think Nevada has really worked hard to ensure that this fighter is in the best position they can be in as a fighter. Our doctors are well trained. Our doctors are communicating consistently with the referee. The referee is experienced in the ring, whether it's the ring, the pit, or an octagon. They know what to look for in a fighter. They know how to communicate with a fighter. And they also know how to communicate with the corner. So all the variables that exist for an MMA or a boxing match exist in BKB and will be present on Saturday night.
The fights are shorter, as Mark Altieri was saying a few moments ago, 5 to 7 rounds. The rounds themselves are shorter, only about 2 minutes. Does that make it safer to you? I mean, he's kind of contended that it does. There's more action, but there is also
I think when you talk about risk, you talk about exposure. And in this instance, the exposure the fighter has to an injury is less. But however, they're going to have to fight at a – they can either take the normal pace or they can increase the pace. One thing to note, too, the fighter at any time can make the choice whether or not they want to continue in the ring or they can step out of the ring. And I find that really interesting because it's on the fighter to determine when they're – in a position to want to go into a safe zone. If you're up against the ropes, you're still having to protect yourself from a punch. And when you're able to walk out of the pit and into a safe zone, I think there is an opportunity for increased safety in this situation.
Mark Altieri?
Yeah, a point to play off of that too, because it was something I didn't get a chance to speak to. In Alex's interview, he makes this point that a fighter could back up and potentially fall. Well, the way the pit is set up is there's that 17-foot diameter, but around that diameter of the pit itself is a padded safety zone. And to Cisco's point, this is a voluntary area that a fighter can step into in any moment that he feels he needs to kind of get a break or get an escape. So that safety zone is, to his point, a voluntary spot that fighters can retreat to. It's padded, so a fighter won't kick back, you know, fall back on and hit his heel or trip and fall into an area that could be in harm's way. It's safe. And again, it provides that option for the fighters. And that would be something that, to the judge's discretion and ref's discretion, if a fighter continues to do that, he could get docked a point or the judges could score him differently for utilizing that frequently. But at the same time, it's the fighter's choice. It's a measure of escape and a measure of safety that fighter can turn to.
Big Knockout Boxing launches Saturday night at the Mandalay Events Center, and we have been talking about it. We heard earlier from boxing writer Alex McClintock. He's criticized the format as too aggressive and dangerous. With us right now, Mark Altieri, official spokesman for Big Knockout Boxing, and Cisco Aguilar. Francisco Aguilar is chairman of the Nevada State Athletic Commission. And if you've got some thoughts based on what you've heard with these gentlemen and also with boxing writer Alex McClintock, who joined us earlier, call us at 702-258-3552. That's 702-258-3552. Joining us now is Dr. Sarah Banks of the Cleveland Clinic Lou Ruvo Center for Brain Health. She is an investigator on the Professional Fighter Study, which is examining the long-term effect of boxing on the brains of fighters. Dr. Sarah Banks, welcome to KNPR.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. You've heard the accusations that big knockout boxing is likely to cause more serious brain injury to fighters because it pushes fighters to attack and offers them no real opportunity to make a defensive retreat. Are those fighters likely, as Alex McClintock said, to be unable to take multiple knockouts in the sport?
I don't think that I can speak to the specifics of big knockout boxing, but here at the Cleveland Clinic, we study regular boxing as well as mixed martial arts fighters, and we've certainly found that there does seem to be an association between the frequency and duration of a fighter's professional career and certain aspects of their cognitive health, including how quickly they can process information, and underlying that seems to be changes in the brain itself, the size of certain structures. So if there were indeed more frequent head injuries and more intense head injuries, then that would be expected to cause more severe brain injury. Although I'm not sure, having listened to some of the commentators before me, that we're necessarily going to see that with this newer sport.
Mm-hmm. So talk about the knockouts and brain injuries. I mean, does a knockout constitute a brain injury in the same way that maybe taking a prolonged beating over a longer fight does?
I think that's a really important point. We don't necessarily know that subconcussive blows, head injuries that don't cause concussions or knockouts exactly, don't necessarily add up to the same level of head injury or brain damage as knockouts. That's one of the things that we're looking at with the study is, do the actual number of knockouts predict long-term outcome versus just the number of fights someone's been in their career or their sparring history? So far, there's been surprisingly little science into the differences between these different kinds of head injury and what it means down the road for the athletes.
As a neurologist, should we be talking about any combat sport as safe? Is there a false distinction in there?
Just to correct you, I'm a neuropsychologist.
Neuropsychologist, okay.
Related,
thank you.
But different. I don't think it's our place as clinicians or researchers to comment on the safety of the sport exactly. One of the things that we're very interested in as part of the study is to provide information to the athletes and to the regulatory bodies to make better decisions down the road. For example, we're interested in what makes some individuals more vulnerable to the effects of repetitive trauma to the brain than others. Are there genetic or demographic factors that makes one individual more likely to have a negative outcome than somebody else? So we're hoping that we can provide as much information as possible for the people who do make those decisions to make sports safer down the road. But I also, just from a personal standpoint, I think that there's always going to be a continuum, and if we say that one set of sports are dangerous and we ban those, then there's going to be another sport down the line which has some degree of contact, which will also have some degree of danger and brain injury involved.
Now, in your work currently with the Cleveland Clinic Lou Ruvo Center for Brain Health, you're working with retired fighters, tracking their functioning, and it's a bit early to be asking about results, but have you found any hints that the boxers in your study are in denial about the potential dangers of boxing?
Well, the study has multiple facets, and one component of that is retired fighters, and we also have a much larger cohort of active fighters. I think that there's differences, there's individual differences. Some of the fighters who come in are very concerned, and they're aware, of course, that they've sustained brain injuries over the years, and they're concerned that that may have a relationship with any kind of cognitive outcome. Others do have a more gladiatorial approach, and they feel like they are more immune. But I don't know that we can say we can give a blanket statement that people are in denial necessarily.
Now, Cisco Aguilar, the athletic commission initially had some reservations about approving big knockout boxing. What were those reservations?
I think the number of variations they were requesting from the state in regards to our rules for boxing and MMA. We held tight and we granted variances in two situations. One was the size of the ring, 17 feet in diameter versus 20 feet in a ring. However, with the 17-foot diameter, you also have that safety zone on the edges at an angle. And then on the other variance we granted was on the number of rounds and the time of the rounds. Variances that were requested for the gloves were denied. We wanted to ensure that we adhered to our rules and regulations as to the actual gloves used.
So when you say variances in this case, you wanted a padded glove. You did not want like a mixed martial arts type open gloves, which would have allowed
bare
knuckles.
We wanted to stick with the traditional boxing
gloves.
Because we have gone through the process that the doctor has explained in understanding what can we do to minimize the risk to the fighter. And the commission has looked at as an objective for the last 10, 15 years.
Can you envisage the Athletic Commission tweaking the rules after the first few events? I mean, you're going to take a look at how they've unfolded?
I think that's all. We're always looking to ensure that we're providing the safest environment as safe as can be in a fight. And once we understand a little bit more of actually having an event, we can go back and tweak those rules if necessary.
Now, Dr. Sarah Banks, the change of gloves that had been discussed at the beginning ended up not being changed at all. But how much difference would that change of gloves have made? Would that have made big knockout boxing significantly more dangerous, or would it not have made much of a difference?
You know, I don't think we know. And my review of the literature with boxers, boxing glove sizes, I don't think that we have enough information to ascertain whether or not that provides an extra layer of safety or not. It seems logical that it would, but we don't have the data to make that decision empirically at this point.
Cisco Aguilar, what happens if the naysayers turn out to be right, that there is a higher element of danger to this new variation of the sport?
You know, I consider myself an optimist, and I like to think that it's going to go well because it is in the benefit of the state and it's in the benefit of the sport. The more events we can have here in Nevada, the more athletes we're going to develop, the better off our doctors are trained, the better referees we'll have, the more judges we'll be able to employ here in the state. And when we do get those super title weights, we're going to be able to provide a good product, and Nevada can be proud of what they're providing. So I don't look at it from whether or not it'll fail and if the naysayers are right. I think what you have to do is look at history, especially with MMA being our newest regulated sport. MMA went through a similar, I guess, discussion, and now I think MMA is one of the fastest growing sports in the world.
Well, aside from that, we've been talking a little bit about the long-term harm with Dr. Banks. What about the notion of the potential for catastrophic injury in the match, where something really severe comes up during the match?
That's a really good question, because in order to prevent that type of injury, the commission gets involved way before a fight actually occurs. There's the approval of the actual fighters as individuals and looking at their health and safety record. Then there's the opponent. Once the fighter has an identified opponent, that fighter goes through the same, I guess, due diligence that we'd have to do as a commission. And then the bout. Ensuring that the bout is fairly matched, that we're not putting one super great fighter against the novice who's just come out of the amateurs. These bouts are matched appropriately and approved by the commission. And once that bout is approved, once they step into the ring, there's a medical exam at the weigh-in. The weigh-in occurs. The fighters show up in the ring. We have the best referees, the best judges, and we have the best doctors. And I think people don't understand sometimes the relationships and the importance of the two doctors sitting in the fighter's corner and their communication with the ref.
How fast, how quick will the referees be to step in a situation where somebody's obviously losing the fight?
You know,
boxing, seems to me, is very different from mixed martial arts or UFC, where the referees are very active and aggressive in doing that. How aggressive will the referees be in this format?
I think they'll be very aggressive, and I think they understand that the sport is new and that they need to be as diligent as they need to be. Fans never want a referee to end a fight. However, there are situations where it does need to occur, and the referee will do it, doing the appropriate due diligence in understanding where the fighter is from a perspective of health and safety.
If you've got some thoughts, you can drop us a line at knprnews.org. That's knprnews.org. Matt joins us from Las Vegas. Matt, thank you for calling. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you. I just a couple of quick points, and I state this as both a one-time to the child judoka personally practice judo, some boxing early on, and currently karateka, martial artist. Three things that really I have to ask the audience to consider. Number one, we're talking, the proponents of this are suggesting that it's an okay thing to do, and obviously it can't be controlled in a capitalist society, but it's an okay thing to do merely because ultimately at the base of it, it'll bring more revenues to the state. And I'm going, that's certainly a questionable consideration. I wonder if any of those individuals will make sure that their children, you know, are certainly brought up to be this form of boxing.
Matt, if you can summarize very quickly, because we're really up against the clock.
Yes, I'll just go to the last point, and the last point is essentially that when we look at the gladiatorial quality of this, we're really not asking another question that's really salient, and that is, who's really going to be the people who are involved in this? Are they really going to be the people I met when I was at Harvard, MIT? No. They're going to be essentially the economic lower strata of the culture, and I think by that very measure, and by what we're really asking of the culture to embrace, we're asking some serious questions of the culture that have to do with more than just profit-making. So I'll leave it at that.
All right. Matt, thank you very much for your call. Mark Altieri, I'm going to give the last word to you in this. Alex McClintock told us that the advent of big knockout boxing should give all boxing fans pause because it reminds us that the knockout, you know, the notion of, in effect, laying an opponent out flat and possibly giving the opponent a brain injury, is the main attraction. Is that a fair critique?
Well, I think it's an interesting subject to raise, but, I can't speak for what a fan finds appealing about boxing and what aspects they think are more entertaining or more authentic to boxing than others. I have to only leave that to the fans to decide. All we can do at BKB is put together what we think is an incredibly compelling and exciting form of boxing that is going to deliver fans really exciting, edge-of-your-seat type of action. I think every boxing fan would agree that that's what they're after in the sport, and that's what we aim to produce.
Big Knockout Boxing launches Saturday night at the Mandalay Events Center. Mark Altieri is the official spokesman for Big Knockout Boxing. Cisco Aguilar is chairman of the Nevada State Athletic Commission, and Dr. Sarah Banks is with the Cleveland Clinic Lou Ruvo Center for Brain Health and an investigator in the Professional Fighter Study. Thank you all for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having us.